Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
It's time now for the Friday gathering, first one of the year. And this week I'm joined in the studio by Green Party TD for Waterford and party spokesperson on social protection, Mark O'Cahasig, Liam Doran, former secretary of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation, Gabby Agata-Fiscaitha, who's political reporter at the Irish Independent. And from our Athlone studio, I'm joined by Independent TD for Roscommon Galway, Michael Fitzmaurice. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for being here today. Now, earlier this week, you might have heard me speaking to Liam O'Brien, who's a patient with Crohn's disease. Liam was four nights on a trolley in Limerick Hospital. He went into the hospital on St. Stephen's Day. Here's a quick reminder of what Liam had to say to us.
It's absolute chaos below. Like, and I was obviously frustrated, and I took a picture in the middle of the night and I posted it. But like, there's hundreds and hundreds of people going in there every day. They're obviously just trying to look for help and help and help, and like, it's chaos there every single hour of the day, every day. You know, it's not just because this has cropped up in the last couple of weeks, and there's like, obviously the numbers on trolleys is at the highest it's ever been, but like, this is a major problem and will be for another long time.
That's Liam there, and we heard so many voices, we've seen so many pictures across all programmes and on social media. Liam, you as former head of the INMO, I mean, what do you make of what's happening this week?
Oh, it's for the patient, it's tragedy. For the staff, it's simply unworkable and intolerable. And I think we have to say that our health system is not functioning and hasn't functioned for this time of year for a number of years now. I mean, it's entirely predictable. We had a lot of conversations. I think my past employer, the INMO, as far back as last June, was predicting that this was going to be a very difficult winter. They were calling for mask wearing and so on. We had the management come out predicting a surge of activity in October, but nothing was done to increase the capacity, to change the work practices in the hospitals so that we could deal with this inevitable increase. And the losers out of this, and it's always the patients who lose, and it is the elderly in particular who lose, and the staff who are trying to
care. And the staff, I mean, we had two nurses on this morning. Exactly. Your heart would go out to them. I don't know how they go into work. I don't know how they go on shift knowing that.
Oh, well, care is compromised, Claire. I mean, people.
It's really tough.
Yeah, people can't ignore the fact that care is being compromised. And I mean, what we have to do is recognise that this is unacceptable and ensure, take the giant steps that have to be taken so that it doesn't reoccur next winter and the winter after.
Yeah.
And the winter
I
after.
Mean, I'm listening to you and I'm wondering how many times we've had this conversation, over how many years.
Well, the INMO started counting trolleys in 2006 nationally. We actually started counting in 2002 for Dublin only. Mm. And then there was no overcrowding in non-Dublin hospitals. And in 05, 06, people on trolleys became a thing. So we went national. So if you're doing something for 17 years and the figures are getting worse, then, you know, everyone has to put their hands up and say, management in particular and politicians in particular have got to put their hands up and say, whatever we've done hasn't changed the system. And this year, more than any year, patients are suffering, staff are suffering. And we have to say the structure of the health system isn't delivering. We don't have integrated care. We have to go back to the Sláintecare care model and say there are immediate steps we have to take. But the bigger steps we have to take is once and for all, get rid of the HSE as that monolithic management structure in the middle. And we've got to devolve power down to these regional health authorities, make the Department of Health responsible so that nobody can pass the buck and say, well, you'll ask the HSE for that one or we'll ask the department for that one. Until that changes and you get accountability at the level where the patient is, you won't get the change. And that means capacity, it means shift to primary care, it means changing the consultant's contract, changing the GP contract. It means all of those things as part of the reform programme. But they're things that have to happen if we're to not have this conversation in 5 years' time and 8 and 10 years' yeah. time, which is what we will do if we continue making the same mistakes that we've made for the last 17 years in this country with regard to healthcare.
Mark, do you think we'll be having the same conversation in 8 years' time?
Unless we take the big steps that Liam is talking about, we almost certainly will. So, I mean, we have an immediate crisis that has to be dealt with in terms of the numbers of people on trolleys right now. And Liam is absolutely correct. I mean, it's intolerable for patients. And I don't know how staff are getting back up for it after all they've gone through over the COVID years to be asked to go to the well again in terms of providing that kind of 7 day cover. But we know it's absolutely necessary for the next couple of weeks. But unless we and unless we continue the work of this government, because, I mean, we have to acknowledge there has been 950 new beds.
We need 5,000.
We absolutely. But we can't do it all in one go. I'm saying that 950 beds in the last 2 years, those are steps in the right direction, but it's by no means the end of the journey. Similarly, there's 340 beds provided in community care. We need an absolute step change in terms of provision of community care, of how we devolve healthcare into the community in that way with primary healthcare. These are all the things that are set out in terms of Sláinte Care, and absolutely in terms of long-term vision, we need to be continuing on that journey. We're nowhere close to where we need to be, but we need to continue making that progress. But in that immediate term, I mean, we have a huge surge in the emergency departments up and down the country. Care is absolutely being compromised, so we need to do absolutely everything we can over the next couple of
weeks. What is it with the Green Party and health? Because you don't have a junior minister in the Department of Health. Is that strategic? Do you not want anything to do with it?
No, nothing like that. We had a limited number of portfolios. We have, you know, we have a mandate that returned a record number of TDs for the Green Party in 12. But that only resulted, you know, in your programme for government negotiation.
There's two Fianna Fáil in there and one Fine Gael. You just wonder, was there not an opportunity for the Greens to get somebody in there, or did you not want to do that?
I mean, if you look at some of the roles that have been taken by Green Party ministers, I mean, incredibly challenging. You look at the workload that Roderick O'Gorman has had to shift over the past couple of years. Similarly,
it wasn't a
Minister
conscious
Ryan,
decision to step away from health.
No, not that I know of, but okay. It's not that we've stepped away from challenging portfolios. Absolutely the contrary. We're really facing up in terms of the responsibility, in terms of integration, in terms of childcare, and in terms of environment, which we know is that existential challenge which dwarfs all else in the
long term. I'll come back to what Roderick O'Gorman is facing in a minute. But Michael, to bring you in there in our Athlone studio, what's the hospital situation like in Roscommon, Galway?
It's the same as any other part of the country. You know, Galway Hospital is under severe pressure. Portiuncla is under pressure. But I think, Claire, we need to, you know, bring a few things into context. There's no magic bullet, in my opinion, because this debate, you've had it for a number of years and your predecessors have had it. Liam said we needed giant steps taken, and he's correct in that. But along with the steps that needs to be taken on the health side of it, we need to also take the steps that will keep the staff there. At the moment, you look at a young nurse going in any of the hospitals, be it Limerick or be it Cork or be it Dublin or wherever, they can't afford the accommodation. One time ago, and Liam would remember this, in the 80s, there was accommodation for nurses. That was all basically done away with. And I think we need to acknowledge as well that, in fairness, and I've seen it time and time again, even during Christmas, I was actually in the hospital a couple of times seeing people. Once a person gets in, the standard of care is good. But we also need to look at where are we going wrong, because this is continuous. We can blame all the politicians in the world, but unfortunately, in my opinion, when Michael Fitzmaurice asks a question now, something in the HSE, we'll get a lovely answer back from the minister that we'll get a reply back in 2 weeks' time. Basically, the Department of Health is nearly the money box, and there is money going out. And in my opinion, and I'll be very clear about this, you could put twice as much money in and you'll get the same result, because the management of the money, there is problems. Also, and I've brought this up on the Dáil several times, we are losing a massive amount of the finest young people in nurses and in young doctors. Why is it that is happening? Why don't we push incentives like into college, that if you sign up to work in an Irish hospital for 6 years, that we'd pay your college fees and that we'd basically give you accommodation? We have to try and push. It's not alone on step-down care and all of that. It's all the different phases. But on top of that,
they're leaving because of the conditions. I mean, I was talking to Sarah this morning here, right? An 8-to-4 shift. She was rostered for 3 days this week, or she worked the 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And she didn't get home some nights till 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock on another night when she walked out. Like, who would sign up for that?
Correct, but they're also leaving, Claire. Now, and in fairness to them, they are committed to what they do, but they're also leaving because they cannot afford basically the price of accommodation in all of these cities. And on top of that, you mentioned there earlier on, Claire, we need 5,000 beds. Do we know how many beds we need, or does anybody know? For the simple reason,
we do.
Well, we don't. We don't. I think the simple reason our population has got a lot bigger. Second of all, what nobody is looking at, Claire, is that in County Roscommon, and this is one county, we have lost 100 step-down beds in nursing homes where they have closed the smaller nursing homes because of rules and regulations. Multiply that, what has happened right around this country, and you actually don't know how many beds you need because we're losing the step-down
beds. Liam Doran, go ahead.
But Michael and everyone, look, quality healthcare is not cheap. We can't, we've privatised the care of the elderly sector in this country to a great extent, okay? The staff working in them are paid little more than the minimum wage. The home helps in this country, I heard yesterday 6,000 packages have been approved, but they can't get people to fill the packages,
yeah,
right? Correct. So people won't work for low pay. Great. So you've got to pay more. And this requires the government to accept that. So when we reform what we're doing, we have to empower and make it competitive. I really feel ironic. You know, the banks in this country say that you can't get a good CEO for 500,000, but we're supposed to be able to get a good home care assistant for 11.50 an hour. I mean, it won't work. We have to value care. And by valuing care, we mean we have to pay people for working in a very hard job. Those home care people, as far as I'm aware, haven't even got the €1,000 COVID payment yet because bureaucracy and delays and so on. I guarantee you, if that €1,000 were owed to staff in the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, it would have been paid a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Right,
Gabby, I'll bring you in on the political side of this. The Minister for Health was outside Beaumont Hospital, wasn't it, the other night, saying that this is going to get worse before it's going to get better, and he asked consultants to work weekends. How do you think he's been handling this?
Yeah, so Stephen Donnelly was in Beaumont during the week. One of the hospitals has actually been dealing with the crisis, I think, a little bit better than some of the others when you look at the likes of Limerick. You know, government have been very much so blaming this. They're saying it's a perfect storm of COVID, flu and RSV. I mean, we've had COVID now for about 3 years. We've had RSV, we've had flu before as well. They're also, I mean, Stephen Donnelly also seems to have gotten into a row of some sort with doctors. You know, he's saying they should be working longer hours and overtime and so on. They're not happy with his comments. He's also blaming the HSE, saying, look, you know, you haven't met your recruitment targets. And we know that as well. So I suppose the question here is it an issue of, is government not giving enough money? Is that money not being utilised? Is there some sort of stalling in the actual, is there not the will, I suppose, the willpower to actually put in change, to make changes at the top, to make those better conditions, to put in those extra beds, to really, I suppose, enact sláinte care. If you look at a government and judge it how well is it serving the people? That's its basic, marker. You look at things like public transport. Hospitals are also a good marker. I mean, the government is totally failing right now. If you go into a hospital with a broken leg, you're in excruciating pain. So I suppose, you know, you can blame whoever it is that you like, but at the end of the day, if you're serious about reforming the health service and easing these overwhelming hospital scenes that we see every single year, I think the two nurses said so the same on the programme. They said every single winter we have the same conversation. Then the change must come from government.
But our health spend is massive. Like, it's 23 mm-hmm. billion a year, isn't it?
So where's that money going? And is it enough?
Well, in fairness, I've heard politicians say that, the Taoiseach say that in the last day. And 23 billion is a lot of money. But we have to understand, in a health system with all of its machinations, we have increased the funding in the last couple of years, but we come from a situation where in 13, 14, 15, we cut back health funding, we cut back student places, we had a recruitment embargo, we closed beds. We did all of those things. And you can't recover from those abject failures of policy and failures of government in 1 or 2 years. And that's why I keep saying, there's no simple fix. As Marcus said, there's no simple fix. But we have to do two things. One, we have to try and deal with the current crisis. And in fairness, extended hours presentation, 7/7 working in hospitals, all of that has to happen and will happen. I think.
What did you think of the minister asking the consultants to work longer hours and work over the weekends?
Well, it's a bit like, without being smart, it's a bit like the nurse this morning, Sarah. It's part of the norm. And in fairness, you know, consultants will. We need senior clinical decision makers on the floor, particularly in emergency departments. And if we're not busy on the surgical side of a hospital, for example, because it's all been stood down, then I don't think they will object to going in to ED and making decisions.
Well, you've touched on a good point now, because where you are in Waterford, what's happening there? There doesn't seem to be a problem, a trolley problem in the ED there.
Well, and a lot of that is down to the management. And I'd mentioned Grace Rothwell in particular, who's the hospital manager there. And she's actually preempted that HSE advice. They do have senior decision makers on the floor 7/7, as Liam said. They also have a senior bed manager 7/7 all the time there. They have a focused bed management team. They've focused clinical teams on a 7-day basis. So they've preempted what actually the HSE has now asked hospitals to do. They're making sure that they have the decision makers at the right points. And they are also bending over backwards to get every possible scrap of a bed. So they're gone into the private provision. They've taken community beds, they've taken nursing home beds. They've been extremely proactive. So it hasn't happened by accident. It's down to very good management.
Connor has texted us and said, counting trolleys since 2006, as you said earlier. It's now 2023. Let's call it what it is. Trolleys are policy, Mark, in this country. They're factored in.
No, I mean, we can't accept that.
But we do. We put up with it. We as a society put up with it. The staff put up with it. You know, we accept it.
Yeah. No, as I said, look, we've worked in this present government to add that 950 extra beds. People are saying that's only 1/5 of the journey. I absolutely accept that, but you can't add them all in one go. Sloan to care has to be the roadmap that we follow so that we need more acute beds, but we also need a lot more beds in the community. I agree with a lot of Liam's points about, you know, the privatisation, particularly of elder care, and whether that's really where we want to go as a society. And we have a huge demographic challenge coming down. I mean, we know that a lot of the presentations to emergency departments this week, we've set a new record for the number of people over 75 presenting. Now, that's due to the fact it's a particularly virulent strain of flu. We know that, but we have more people who are over 75 in the community.
But Mark, that's the point. We have 20 plus thousand people turning 65 every year.
Yeah.
We have to model that into our healthcare system. And that's where care of the elderly services and nursing homes have a role to play. We have to use nursing homes to avoid unnecessary admissions.
Well, look what Michael was just saying there about the closure of beds in that sector and step down beds.
And because we have to fund it. We have to. I'm obviously more in favour of public delivery of healthcare, but we've privatised our elder care system now. But if we have them as an integral part of our total health system, then you can't have a situation where the elderly person who becomes sick is transferred from the nursing home to the public hospital to be left on a trolley when they could be have their care managed with IV antibiotic therapy, IV fluid balance or whatever in the nursing home in a much more care sensitive, much more care specific, person specific care plan and so on. All those things have got to be done to avoid unnecessary.
Because the private nursing homes have been calling now for an increase in their funding. Are you saying you agree with that?
If we enrich the staff, we make the skill mix richer, employ more nursing staff, make the nursing homes carry out as a matter of norm certain levels of care that avoid the elderly person being put in to an acute hospital where they can't sleep, the lights are on, they're on a trolley. What's better for them? To be left in a nursing home in a room of their own, have their fluid balance improved, have IV antibiotic therapy done. All those things have got to be countenanced as part of our reform, while at the same time we get rid of the management bureaucracies, the siloed budgetary systems we have in our system.
Even a step before that, Liam, I mean, ageing in place, we have to invest in that. So that's the home care packages, that's around making, you know,
universal design. Well, would you work in home care, would anyone in this country work in home care when the rate is whatever, 12, 13 euro an hour, they have to provide their own car, they have to provide their own mobile phone, you have two or three or four or five agencies providing those staff to do home care packages and so on. It is a deficit.
Michael, go
situation.
Ahead, yeah. Yeah,
Liam, you're okay. Just for your information, there is a lot of private providers in relation to home care packages that you talked about. They are crying out over the last number of years, and the reason a lot of them cannot get staff is that the HSE will only give them a contract, a short-term contract. And if you or I were left in a situation that we were asked to go to work and not knowing would we have work next week or would we have work in a month's time, you cannot get a mortgage, you cannot get a loan for a car. And unless the HSE treat them properly as well. But on top of that, the HSE properties section, I see Sacred Heart Hospital in Roscommon, a fabulous facility where there was a new building to be done. It's gone on for the last 8 or 9 years. If that was a private person that have it built, done, people would be within it. There's so much rigmarole and look at it, you'd pull your hair out at times with the way that the HSE properties section goes on as well. And unless that there's someone that conducts this orchestra and conducts it properly, we'll be back here in 4, 5, 6 years' time, unfortunately, saying the same things, because if you haven't a chief that knows how to run the whole show and put structure into it, then you're in serious trouble.
Yeah, but Michael, the only way...
Isn't it? That's the management problems, I suppose, that we're seeing. And government says we've put in all this money. The money may be one thing, but if you don't have operators that are willing to enact the change, that are willing to say, right, we're going to speed up here, we're going to think smarter, just how you're saying, Mark, in Waterford, you know, the manager there was able to foresee we're going to have a serious problem this winter. I'm not waiting for the HSC to give me my advice. I'm going to take those steps now. I mean, I suppose management has a big role to play too.
Liam, what do you think about the prospect of action being taken by nurses up to the point of strike?
Well, that's
Do you think it's a possibility?
Oh, I think it's a possibility, a probability. I mean, obviously that's a matter for the organisation and the members. But no worker, nurse or anyone else, should be expected to go in to that work environment day in, day out, year in, year out. It's what nurses and other staff have been asked to do at the moment. It is intolerable. You know, it is unforgivable and it compromises care. That's the biggest concern nurses have, is that, yes, it's a hellhole for them in terms of having to go in there and deal with, I heard this morning, people giving out to them and so on and all of that. But it's an even bigger hellhole for the patients. We all have patients there, and the relatives don't know whether they can sit beside the trolley. They don't know whether they can get in the door or not. The drug times are delayed. You're waiting for chest X-ray. It's a hellhole for everyone. And if the only option they have is to, as it were, bring things to a head by having industrial action, then I fully understand that and I would fully support and I'd walk the picket line with them.
You see, Mark, that's the problem. The government doesn't have time here. If that is on the table, and we heard from our two nurses this morning that they certainly wouldn't rule it out, they're at the end of their tethers. I'd say like every hospital nurse in the country, that's what you're facing if something isn't done and done quickly.
Yeah, I was a primary school teacher before this, and similar to nurses, primary school teachers are very slow to move to a strike action. They're very slow to move to industrial action because they have that pastoral element to their care that they take extremely seriously. If the nurses are telling us that they see no other way forward, and I've always been a member of a union, I believe in the right to collective bargaining. We know that this is, I mean, it's a profession, but there is a huge vocational aspect. These people take it extremely seriously. And if they find themselves at a crisis point, I mean, we know there's a huge recruitment and retention issue. And we know that a lot of that is down to working conditions. I know from talking to nurses working in the hospital that the lifts, for example, they'll often find themselves performing a patient lift in a way that they don't want to because they're understaffed.
There's no hoists. You can't get
no hoist.
The trolley. You can't use the hoist to lift the patient because you can't access, you can't get the hoist in to lift. Yeah. So you have
and
to make do.
That compromises patient safety and it compromises the safety.
You
of the
sound like a member
well.
Of the opposition saying all this, because if Minister Stephen Donnelly was here, he'd be telling us how many more thousand members of staff they've recruited over the last
year.
I know.
Okay, so there are moves in the right direction. But, I mean, I'm not going to come in and tell you that the health service is in a perfect condition when it is clearly and evidently not, and particularly in this surge situation. I'm saying that this government has taken a number of measures, and you're saying to me, well, that's not enough as yet. I fully agree. We're not finished. So we have added those extra beds. We've added all of that extra
staff. Do you think it's enough for us to hear from the minister? It's going to get worse before it gets better. And then a long list of the things that he has done and the amount of money he's spent and the extra staff that he has and 950 extra beds, which is meaningless because we've all these people on trolleys every day. Look, do you think that's good enough?
There is an international context to this, and this is not to apportion blame or to try and avoid blame. But, I mean, we are seeing this across Northern Europe at the minute. We have a particularly virulent strain of flu. It is coinciding with COVID cases. It is coinciding with RSV. So even places like that we would be synonymous with, you know, a perfectly functioning health system, places like Finland, places like Switzerland, they are struggling to cope with the number of people presenting to emergency departments at the minute as well. We absolutely need to implement these short-term measures around seven over seven working. The HSC has directed hospitals to do that, but we also have to have an eye to that long-term planning. We have to use Sláintecare as that pathway.
But the saddest thing I have about this is that Sláintecare issued its report 6 years ago, right? Will anyone please tell me the substantial steps we've taken to implement it. Like, I've heard a lot of stuff about change and all this, and the department will come out now and hit me with this, that and the other and so on. Much of that would have happened anyway.
Well, we have the new consultants contract.
That's the, you just the took the word. The biggest potential step forward was that public contract, and that's being balloted on, so I can't comment on it and so on. But that is a step forward. We need the GP contract to be reorganised. We need the massive shift into primary care. We need to empower the health professionals into the future. But we also need the three elective hospitals. You talk about lack of planning. They've been identified for 6 years. There's not a block on the ground yet. Right. They've spoken about this year, and they haven't even been done. You talk about bed capacity. That's bed capacity that everyone agrees should happen. And that's in addition to the other 3,500, 4,000 we need just in the acute hospital. But nothing's been done about that.
Okay.
And then you have to have a manpower plan. Like, everyone talks about, we need more nurses, we need more doctors. Where are we going to get them from? Mm. Rob them from countries that also need them. We need to train more nurses and midwives ourselves, train more doctors, train more physios, OTs, dietitians, a massive revolution of an overhaul, so that, yes, even belatedly, 6 years after launch of care, we could say in 5 to 10 years we will be in a better place where Ireland is self-sufficient.
Train them and convince them to stay here. It's a big challenge.
Liam, just very quickly, I think actually if you speak to government, they'd probably agree with everything that you've said. And I think if you listen to Mark's remarks there, you know, I think very much so, if you talk to backbench TDs, they'd agree with you and they'd say government isn't doing enough, and maybe you'd never have a minister or certainly a cabinet minister that would come on and say it on the record. But like, the reality is the government knows it's not working. It knows it's not enough. And look, the reality is that 950 beds, like, it's indefensible.
Been,
it's just not
enough.
There
has been some progress, and you have to acknowledge the level of headwind. I mean, I don't know how health care workers are gearing themselves up to another challenge after 2 years. But I mean, we can't underestimate. We have.
No, that will be fine, right? That will be fine to sit here and say, look, we're in a terrible situation. These three things are hitting us from all sides. Mm. If we weren't in this situation every year for the last 17 years, you know, maybe not quite as bad, but nearly.
Yeah, and I can't answer to 17 years of policy, but I can say that since the Green Party's participation in government in the last
My point
years,
is that you can't say we're in a situation where the headwinds are getting us from all sides. You can't say that because it happens every year.
Oh, no, I was referring to the 2 years of the pandemic. I mean, it's been, Liam was saying there wasn't a block laid in the elective hospitals. I mean, we have had 2 years where it's been very difficult to lay block, you know, because we have successive lockdowns.
You could have built all these things. Where are the sites? Where's the architectural plan? Where's all that preparatory work? Surely should have been done by 6 years on, when everyone admitting that they're needed and warranted. And you can go back to co-location in 07, whether you liked it or not. It was planning 6 200-bedded elective hospitals on the site. We need those elective hospitals, and we need them now.
I was going to move on to other topics, but actually I'm going to stick with this until the end, because, Michael, we touched on this earlier on, and I said that we accept this. As a society, we accept this. Opposition politicians talk about it as ad nauseam. But, I mean, it's proof in the fact that this has been going on for so long, that we allow this to happen. Would you agree?
Correct. But as I outlined earlier, Claire, I think if politicians are honest, whether you're in opposition or in government, we're like the piggy bank at budget time, and it's handed over to an entity that we don't know how or which way it's being spent. You have the HS, you have the Department of Health, and basically what they do, they're handing over the money. This capital plan's done. And as Liam rightly pointed out, like, if you're building a house, you do a plan, you get planning, and you drive on and you build it. We're seeing all these plans down through the years, but there's nothing being done. And I'm a firm believer that people needs to be accountable in certain positions. And you cannot keep getting away, or we cannot keep closing our eyes to what's going on, basically not knowing where X, Y, and Z is spent. And on top of that, in the infrastructural side, that there's no accountability. I even look at the Children's Hospital. Like, it's the greatest farce. Like, I worked in construction, and you'd pull your hair out if you had to look at the way the contracts were done on that. It's an open door for the person that's building it. But on top of that, Claire, all the different infrastructural projects that will help the situation. But then when you bring up ideas to the likes of government, I would have brought up an idea, and like, it was used many a time in the private sector, that if you give an incentive to a youngster that wants to go in nursing, and look at, they're committed to it, that If you pass your exams after year one, we'll reimburse you all your fees, all your accommodation. But you'll sign something that you'll stay in this country for 6 years. That's how you do incentives. That's how you keep people in place.
What reaction did you get to that when you suggested it?
Well, look, at the thought it was a great idea, but it never came to pass. Right. On top of that, if you look at doctors...
Michael, I have to stop you there because I didn't realise we're past 12 o'clock.
Just one thing.
We're eating into another programme's time now. So
There seems to be a system
10 seconds.
Here that doctors have to go through to get into to college to be a doctor. It's rigmarole. And you can come from another country and have your papers. I think we need to look at the whole situation.
Have to leave it there, Michael. Thank you very much. And thank you to all of you for being here today. We're well over time. We'll see you back here on Monday at 10 o'clock. Neil Doherty is next.
Claire, thank you very much. Have a great weekend. We made it. It's Friday.